Hi, this is Jim Swilly. Welcome to Metron Live. Metron is a Greek word that means sphere of influence. I believe in living your best life possible, and that's the reason for this podcast. This is my Metron. Now let me help you discover yours. We speak in this atmosphere, and we say, let there be light. I'm going to finish up this series today. Those of you who are just tuning into the podcast, welcome. Our title for this month is Reimagining Your Life and Making Next Level Thinking a Reality. And I'm going to go back and use the same passage of scripture that I began this with. This will be the Omega to that Alpha. But I'm going to use it out of a different translation. This is out of the Message Bible. And it's Genesis chapter 1. And the literalness of the Genesis account is immaterial to me. It doesn't matter to me if God created things in 6 24-hour periods, as the fundamentalists believe. That when people argue over that sort of thing, they miss what the point is. The point is the revelation of it. The greatest thing in Genesis, possibly the greatest thing in the Bible, is and God said, "Let there be light." That arguably is the most profound thing that's stated in the entire Bible, certainly in the creation account, because in Moses' idea, nothing's created without light. Like, the first thing is light. Light is before anything else. And you read after so many of these different people in different streams, New Thought, New Age, healing, shamans, they all agree on this one point. It all begins with light. It all begins with enlightenment. If you don't have enlightenment, somebody can teach you forever, and you still, it will be like where the scripture says they're ever learning and never coming in the knowledge of the truth. I mean, how many times do you see something happen to somebody and somebody says, when will they ever learn? Because you can't learn without enlightenment. Until the light comes on for you, God himself can walk in front of your face and speak to you, and you won't even notice it. So the way we began this is we talked about, in the Genesis account, in chapter 1, everything is created through God's spoken word. You're familiar with that. And God said, every one of these verses in Genesis 1 begins with, and God said, and it ends with, and it was so. And God said, and it was so. And then in verse 31, it says God looks back over all of his creation and says it is good. And it is with that mindset that he enters into the Sabbath. The Sabbath is not a rest because you're tuckered out from all the creating. It's a recognition of what you have created and accepting it, which bringing it to us, and this is for mature audiences only, because the premise of what we're talking about this month is that for the most part, you have created your own life. And even those things that were beyond your control, you still were involved in the creation process because the way you reacted to them determined how your life was going to turn out. So at the end of the day, it really is you. It's not God, it's not the devil, it really is you. If I may refer to Job once again, that's the whole premise of Job. In my mind, it's the ultimate humanist manifesto, because it begins... The story begins with God and the devil arguing over what to do with Job's life. And you know that God says you can do anything but kill him. And so Satan does everything but kill him. And the whole narrative is Job can't figure out what the heck's going on with his life. And finally, God comes, speaks to him out of a whirlwind and says, Job, you're the only one that can stop this. It begins with, is it God? Is it the devil? And it ends with, oh, it's me. I could even take that so far, and he who has an ear, let him hear. Sometimes you're God, sometimes you're the devil in your own life. Sometimes you're your angel, sometimes you're your accuser of the brethren. You ever been so down on yourself that you didn't need anybody else? You're like, hey, there's nothing, you couldn't say anything that would be nearly as bad as what I'm already saying to myself. So knock yourself out. I'm already hating myself about what I did, so I don't need you piling on as immaterial at this point. But I like the way, I want to go back a little bit before verse 31. We're actually going to begin in verse 26, and this is in the Message. I don't like everything the way Peterson translated the message, but the most of, about 97% of everything, I really love the way he said it. But here it says, God spoke, let us make human beings in our image, make them reflecting our nature so they can be responsible for the fish in the sea, the birds in the air, the cattle, and yes, earth itself. Now, let me just stop right there. You could say, well, I'm not living in animal kingdom. I mean, well, I don't need to be responsible for fish. You're missing the point if that's what you saw in that. What he's saying there is everything in the tangible world, let's make human beings responsible for them. The fish, the birds, those are metaphorical for you. It may be the job, the marriage, the kids, the money, just everything you deal with in a day. And let me just go ahead and give you the disclaimer. In a minute, I'm going to get very real with you. So if you're, I hope you have your reality, you took your reality pills this morning, because this is going to be a no BS zone today. You heard? Okay. It says, and yes, even earth itself and every animal that moves on the face of the earth. Or I could just as easily say everything that I encounter in my world. Okay. God created human beings. He created them godlike, reflecting God's nature. He created them male and female. God blessed them. Prosper, reproduce, fill earth. Take charge. Be responsible. And remember that word. We're going to come back to it. For fish in the sea and birds in the air, for every living thing that moves on the face of earth. Then God said, I've given you every sort of seed-bearing plant on earth and every kind of fruit-bearing tree, given them to you for food. To all animals and all birds, everything that moves and breathes, I give whatever grows out of the ground for food. And I just love this sentence. It says, and there it was. Judah had everybody repeat today, it is what it is. Here he says, God creates everything. And there it was. To bring it to a personal level, I could say, there's your life. There's your reality. There's your is. Okay? And there it was. God looked over everything he had made. It was so good, so very good. It was evening. It was morning, day six. Now, what we talked about a few weeks ago when we started this was you can't enter day seven until you have processed day six. And if you have unfinished day six business, then Sabbath remains elusive to you. There are a lot of people who play Sabbath. They pretend like they're okay. There are a lot of people who are in Sabbath by virtue of denial. I'm going to pretend like everything's okay, but it's really not. And then when something happens, when pressure is applied, then the reaction, it's either external, it comes out in behavior that surprises you, or you internalize it and it becomes a disease. But it's everything is going to affect you one way or the other. You cannot ignore stuff and expect to be okay. Now, I understand wanting to get away from it. Here's the real part. The last couple of weeks have been challenging for me. Last Sunday, more than I can even tell you, was a hard day. It was hard for a lot of reasons. I can trace a lot of it to the school shooting. You know, like when I turned on the news, like there's a part of me just like, good God, seriously? Really? And then the other thing that's scary to me is that I glaze over. And I'm like, I can't sit here and watch this, and I change channels. That's next level depressing. Because, like, I'm upset it happened, and I'm upset that I'm not more upset about it just because I don't have any more emotion to invest. And then you look at the arguing on both sides that goes on nonstop on social media. And to me, the tribalism, polarization, arguing, and ridiculous arguing, and the same things that are said on both sides over and over and over again, I find equally depressing. I mean, I'm just as bummed out about everything that I'm reading And there's things that people post that I love that I'm like, surely to God, you can't really, seriously, you can't possibly mean that. And I don't want to argue with you. And then you get in this toxic environment where everything you post invites an argument. I mean, I was loath to say anything about Billy Graham dying because you invite argument. I went back and forth and I thought, I'm going to post a picture of him and Martin Luther King together in 1956 for all the people that are saying that he's racist. And because this was right after the Montgomery bus boycott, and he invited King to come and pray at New York. But it is true that King asked him to march with him, and he didn't. So, yes, there's two sides to that argument. And the people who say he should have been more socially aware or whatever, there's two sides to that argument. The white supremacist used to be upset that he had Ethel Waters sing it all of his. So, you know, there's that argument goes on and on and on. And so I ended up, Judah had posted a YouTube video of an interview that he did with Robert Shuler years ago. It was very good. When you really actually talk to Billy Graham, he actually was a Christian universalist. He really believed in ultimate reconciliation. His followers didn't. His children definitely don't. I mean, his next generation went backwards in, you know, the inclusion message. But I finally just posted that. But I thought, man, I can't believe this is the climate that if I just say, rest in peace, Billy Graham, I got to deal with, you know. And then people were saying things that he said that I know he didn't say. Like, I don't think he was that progressive on gay rights issues, but he never said that gay men should be castrated. That's just not true. And so people are posting things on both sides. I'm like, you know, I hate the term fake news, but I'm like, baby, it's coming from both sides. Like, nearly everything I'm seeing that people are posting, I'm like, can't you tell that somebody made that up? On both sides. Just ridiculous things. I mean, I don't think it's any shock that I'm not a huge fan of the current administration. And even I'll see post things that Trump said. I'm like, well, he didn't say that. I mean, that's not true. You're missing. You're diluting your argument because you're saying stuff that he didn't even say. Believe me, there's enough stuff he actually did say. If you want to make your point, post that. You don't need to make stuff up that makes you look like a liar. And honestly, it just was. It was really getting to me. And then, you know, when you're, you know, dealing with, not with this one, but I have other kids that are, you know, they're going through issues. And I'm like, well, you know what? You're adults. Y'all have got to figure it out. I can't fix everything for you. And with my parents, like, oh, y'all got issues, but I can't fix everything for you. And it's just a part of the process. And, you know, last Saturday we go to the funeral home, and the man that died was just 8 years older than me. And then I did a funeral Sunday. The guy was 6 years older than me. And, you know, it's like, and I'm just, you know, I'm processing my own aging that's coming up in a few weeks. And I'm like, wow, two funerals in 1 week and the people who are kind of in my age neighborhood. You know what I mean? I'm already, you know, I'm having a little hard time with 60. Please tell me he was 85. Oh, no. He was in your graduating class. I'm like, shoot. Ugh, man. Normally it wouldn't affect me, but it was just a lot. So I'm going to tell you, us going out of town was a little bit of an escape. And the reason we post so many freaking pictures is because I go on social media and I'm reading the thing. I'm like, by God, I'm putting another beach picture on here. And then I got people who say, you're out of touch. You need to speak up on issues. I'm like, no, I need to ride this damn bicycle on this beach is what I need to do, because me saying more stuff is just going to make more people argue, and it's going to make more people double down. It's going to make more people double down. So what I'm saying, I'm not going to tell you that being spiritual means you're skipping through life going, la, 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 everything's perfect. No, it means that some days you think, okay, I'm having a little bit of a time. I'll get back. I'll be in the heart of the earth 3 days. I will resurrect as I always do, but I'm going to need a minute. And let me also say that while we're out of town, we're still working. But both our phones, between his kids, my parents, other people, people telling me, can your church help? And I'm like, I'm out of town. Let me just, do you have a PayPal account? I'll just send it to you myself. I mean, a lot. It's just, sometimes it's just easier. Let me send this person a little money, because if I don't, and they're going to, because I know what this is like. When you're at a restaurant and you put, you know, that you're having a good time, and then somebody says, well, I'm out of gas, I'm out of water, could you please send me some money? And then if you don't, then they're on your picture going, well, it must be nice to be able to go to it. So I'm like, don't you put that evil on me, Ricky Bobby. I'm going to send you some money, and then let me eat my scallops. Just let me get through, because I'm working real hard this weekend to stay on top. This is a working vacation, because it's me. I got to get back up where I got to be, because I got to tell some people stuff Sunday. Am I being too real? Let me tell you how real it got last week. Monday night, what? And, you know, Ken has taken on, not only is he trying to get his dad's house transitioned for his kids to move in, which that's a whole other drama he's got going on, getting that done. But he's also taking on these nighttime clients. After he gets through working, he goes does stuff for them. So basically, we only see each other on weekends, which is fine, but it's still, you know, a process. Last week, I could have used a little company. You know what I'm saying? So it's one of those nights where you're like, let me go to the store and get something to eat. So I'm driving home, and there was one way to go home. You go under an underpass where my building is, and as I'm getting to the underpass, there's like 30 police cars out there, and I thought, what's going on? And I looked, and there's a man standing on the outside of the bridge like he's about to jump. It was the wrong night for me, because I'm like, whatever, dude. If you're going to do it. I mean, I hate to tell you all that, but I was like, because there's a part of me that said, should I stop and try to talk this guy off the bridge? I'm like, no, I'm going to say move over, you know? Like, I mean, I hate to say that, but there's a part of me like, if you're going to do it, just jump into traffic and don't make all these people sit here for 4 hours while they try to talk you off the bridge. I'm sorry, you know, I'm sorry it's come to that. And so I got home and I looked out the window and I could see all the cop cars. I thought, well, I should at least pray, like, dear God, please don't let the man kill himself, you know. And then in a few minutes, the traffic cleared, so I guess they talked him down. And then I thought, oh, I should be compassionate. It's probably, it could even be some homeless guy that doesn't even want to, he needs a place to stay tonight, so this is a way to get incarcerated. I mean, it could be, you know, he'll get a meal or whatever. And so it's sad. I don't want to be the indifferent rich guy in the building, like, ha, 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 commit suicide, you homeless people. I care not. I don't want to be that guy. But there's just some days, you know what I mean? You're like, I got nothing to give you. I'm paddling real hard to keep my own head above ground. And when you see school shooting stuff, you know, you can't complain about the stuff you're going through because it seems so trivial. So I'm just like, you know, then I don't want to talk about it. Let's just go out of town. Let's go out of town. And thank God it was wonderful. The weather was nice. We needed it. We needed some time together. And it was just good. It was very therapeutic. And it was, you know, we had our usual great mojo where you just get right in the zone. Everything was great. You know, we're like, well, we should ride bikes. And he called some place where they come and they drop them off there. And then when you're through, you just leave them there and they come pick them up. It was like, oh, man, this is great. It's just great to get, just ride around and let's look at something pretty and look at the sunrise and get some rest. It was just, but I could tell you, I was getting out of town intentionally. And I'm going to say this, and if the person watching me is streaming, don't be offended. I need to make this point, and I hope you receive this in the spirit that I'm sending it, because the person I did send money to this week had posted, well, I'm doing God's plan like God told me to, but now I've gotten out here and I've lost everything. Like, they were in dire straits. And I thought, well, don't... It's like you're mad at God. And I don't have time to to argue this because my food's getting cold, so I'm just going to send you the money. But it, but I looked at all these other, like somebody else had posted on the feed. Like, I've unfollowed so many people because of politics now, I don't even recognize anybody on the feed. But I'm looking at, like somebody posted, God, why don't you give me a break? It's like so many people who are in crisis are mad at God. God, I did this for you. Why aren't you coming through for me? And I thought, wow, y'all got to get out of that lane because that lane's going to lead you off in a ditch. That's the wrong way. That's just the wrong way to look at it, because basically this idea that God's got every little thing mapped out for you to do, it's kind of things that we made up. Basically, what I think God says is, you decree a thing, it'll be established unto you. We've referred to this so many times, but Bill, what's his name, that did the you referred to it last time you were here, the Sidewalk Sunday School in New York. He had this huge, Bill Wilson. I don't even know if he still does it, but back in the day when we had him at Church of the Nail, he had this huge, like what they call Sidewalk Sunday School in New York for at-risk kids. And it came out of the fact that his own mother left him on a curb one day when he was 9 years old, said, sit right here, I'll be right back, and she never came back. He never saw her again. And he said something that just cut through all the charismatic nonsense. Because he said, and he'd been through all kinds of stuff. He'd been shot in the face. I mean, it was a very dangerous neighborhood he was in. But he said, people have asked me, were you called to children's ministry? He said, no, the need was the call. He said, nobody else was doing it, so I just did it. And I loved that because it was practical. And with all the stuff he'd been through, in his message, he never blamed God. It was never this sense of entitlement. Oh, God, I did this for you, and now look what you've done to me. Now, look, there were people in the Bible who said the same thing. When Jeremiah talked about fire shut up in my bones, he was yelling at God. He was mad at God. Why did you call me to do this? So it's not a new thing to have that argument. It's just a pointless argument. I could tell you this, and one thing I got out of the faith message, if I didn't get anything else, this got deeply settled in me. I remember picking up a little Kenneth Hagin. He used to have these little mini books for 65 cents you could get. And they just, you know, they were like out of one of his teachings. They put it in book form. But just on the cover of it, it said, don't blame God. And I think it had somebody's hand. They had a Band-Aid on their finger. It said, don't blame God. And it was just a very simple exegesis of why it's pointless to blame God for things. And I not just because of that book, but I remember that really confirmed something in me. So believe me, I know what it's like to be in the midst of drama, but it never occurs to me to think this is God's fault. I just think, oh, well, this is the way people are, or this is church world, or this is the way, that's just the way life is, whatever. But I always believed, well, blaming God is like cutting your nose off to spite your face. I mean, God's the one that you need to be there for you. So if you're all like, why did you let this happen to me after all I've done for you? That's a really arrogant and stupid thing to say. Nobody ever wants to hear, after all I've done for you. No, that's like, that never works. If somebody gives to you and then they get mad and they go like, after all I've given you, like, oh, really? That's what that was? Is that what this was about? And the last thing you want to do is do that with God. After all I've given up for you. It's just such a bogus thing. But I notice how many people, this is where I was this week. I can relate to and understand why people feel overwhelmed, because I felt it too last week. Do you know what I mean? It's like there were people, you know, the usual amount of prayer requests coming in. And, I try to be there for people, because if I don't answer them, then it's like, is everything okay? Is everything? So I'm like, all right, let me answer you. But there are some times when you're on the other end, you think, I'm not your guy this week. I need a pastor. You know, I need somebody to talk to. But you can't do that. So I have to find my own ways to deal with it. Like, okay, this is how you're going to get through it. The least thing I want to do is get on the World Wide Web and energize. I'm real depressed because that ain't going to fix it. Because A, misery loves company. So all the other depressed heads are going to pile on, make you feel worse. And I know what it's like to want to reach out to people and say, but I just do the opposite. I'm like, let's create a different vision. Like when we post a picture of us, if we don't like the way it looks, but we kind of like the picture, we doctor it a little bit. Now some people say, why do you doctor? Because that's the way I see us. That's the way I see me, and that's the way I want to present. When people go, oh, did you doctor? Well, yeah, did you put on makeup this morning? Like everybody, you didn't come in a costume, but you came with the best case version of you. So, you know, you don't go to the store and go, let me put on something that's going to make me look as fat as I possibly can, because that's the goal I'm looking for. Because I'd like to come in this morning and go, oh my God, you put on so much weight. That's what I want to hear from people. No, you look right. You put on the jacket that's like, oh, well, that's a little slenderizing. Good. That's going to make me feel better about what I'm putting out there in the world. Because what you put out there is what you get back. And I'm not just, when I talk about the physical, I mean that about everything. Do y'all doctor your pictures of sunset? Yeah, we do. There's apps on your phone for that. That's no big secret. It's not like you've been uncovered. Did you move that little dial on that app that made that red a little bit brighter? That's a lie. No, that's not a lie. That's the world we're trying to create in our heads that we want to put out there. So when I put the positive stuff out, sometimes I put it out ironically. You ever done that? You ever put a, wow, what a beautiful day it is, because inside you're like, mm-mm, I ain't getting out of bed this morning. But it ain't going to help me to say I ain't get out of bed this morning, because aren't there some people that you scroll through and you're like, good God, this guy, he's in drama every time you see him. You at least ought to get every third one. You can tell, like, this person's in crisis mode every minute. No. I was thinking of... delete that. But there are some people, every post is that. And you think, well, that's, you're getting it back because you're putting it out there. And the thing is, here's some news. Life's good, but life's hard. You can be positive, but you got to work at it. It doesn't come naturally. And if you did it yesterday, you still got to do it tomorrow. You could have gotten up the crack of dawn this morning and worked to look your very best. You could have had hair and makeup come in and lighting and everything. You're still going to look like you slept all night when you get up tomorrow morning. You got to start it. You could brush your teeth this morning until your gums bled. Guess what? Tomorrow morning, you got to brush your teeth again. You don't just get up and go, oh, I brushed them good yesterday, la, la, la. No. That's why I downloaded that audiobook, because I probably know everything that was said in that book, but I thought, no, you know what? I need to... Even if I'm just riding in the car and getting every other, you know, because I'm thinking about other things, this is still good when he says, agreement number two, never take anything personally. I'm like, yep, I could probably hear that every day. That's probably a good thing to hear every day, not to take anything personally, because at the end of the day, nothing really is ever about you when somebody else's reaction is really more about them. So Paul says, if there be any virtue, if there be any praise, think on these things. Meaning, you got to look for it. That's why I said, I don't know where a blessing is. Nobody wants their car rear-ended on the way to church. If y'all were immature, you could have said, No, he did not. While we're going to the house of God this morning, but I don't think that entered your mind. If you're angry about it, it's understandable to be angry about it. You have to process. You have to compartmentalize. And then you got to figure out what to do with it. I've shared this with you before, but the only wrecks I've ever had have been, and I'm not saying it's women drivers, but it's been a woman rear-ending me. It's happened enough times that I've thought, is there a stronghold I need to break? You know, sitting still, a woman plows into me. And this one that did, I'm just sitting at a red light, and she, you know, was texting and then looks up in there. And for months after that, I mean, I would go see Dr. Sheila, but my neck was hurting afterwards. And I'd try to go to sleep at night. My neck was hurting. I thought, oh, that woman, why couldn't you have looked where you were going? And then I remember sitting up in bed one day thinking, I'm going to have to forgive her because I'm mad at her when I go to bed, and she's still making my neck hurt. I'm retaining the pain because when I notice the pain, I'm mad at her for not paying attention and plowing into me like she did. So I remember sitting up in bed and literally saying, all right, you know what? I forgive you. It could happen to me too. I hope that it doesn't. I'm going to have to let this thing go. And then my neck started getting better. But your emotions maintain your pain. And not everything is emotionally connected, but most things are. So what I want to leave with you, and I've got a few things to show you here, but what I want to leave with you is, I love when it says God looked over everything he created and said, it's very good. You can't get to day seven until you live out day six. That means looking at all of your life choices, all that has come from the choices you've made, and embrace all of it. It doesn't mean, listen, doesn't mean you don't have scars. I think it's unrealistic to say that you've gone through life unscarred. I think you have to process your scars and remind yourself, oh, that's when that happened, or that's when this happened, or that's, and literally wear your scars as a badge of honor. Let me show you this good motivational speaker that I quote, Steve Maraboli. It says, the victim mindset dilutes the human potential. By not accepting personal responsibility for our circumstances, we greatly reduce our power to change them. So as soon as you say, God, why don't you fix this? Or I was doing the will of God and now I'm out here with no gas and no water, whatever. You automatically put yourself in victim mode. And let me tell you something. When you announce to the universe that you're a victim, you might as well be a carcass laying by the road. Have you ever been driving down the highway and you see those vultures circling and well, they see something dead. How do they spot it? Because they have their senses up. The universe is full of cosmic vultures that are not going to try to resuscitate you beside the road. They're just going to pick at you for their own ravenous appetite. So. The idea of, God, don't you see how victimized I am? It doesn't, whatever you're, even if you think of the Jewish God sitting on a throne, old man, traditional idea, even that, it doesn't work. You can't get God to pity you into changing a situation. Even saying, okay, God, I don't know, I was on this adventure for you and I don't know what happened. No, stop saying stuff like that. It's working against you. If nothing else, say, well, that was a fabulous lesson learned. It was a little painful, but I learned a great lesson. The next thing I want to show you is Stephen Covey. I'm using a lot of these motivational speakers. He's the guy that wrote The 7 Habits of Highly Effective People. He says, I love this. He says, look at the word responsibility. Responsibility. The ability to choose your response. Highly proactive people recognize that responsibility. They do not blame circumstances, conditions, or conditioning for their behavior. Their behavior is a product of their own conscious choice based on values rather than a product of their conditions based on feeling. Whether you admit it or not, this applies to everyone under the sound of my voice, including myself. The only way you're going to go to next level thinking is just take blame and victimization out of the equation entirely. And it's a constant discipline. Yesterday, we had our bikes and we rode them to get breakfast, and there was a little cafe where you could sit outside, and it was just a beautiful morning. It was great breakfast. And I don't know how we got on it. Somebody had their dog. They were walking their dog, and people were talking about dogs, and I brought up a painful experience from my childhood about dogs that I went through and why I don't have a dog and don't really relate to them. And that led to the next, kind of painful story. And I thought, what am I doing? What the heck am I doing? I'm sitting here in paradise. Beautiful vacation. I mean, it was just beautiful. The morning was beautiful. The weather was so nice. It's the most I've ever enjoyed Hilton Head because it was warm. It was like close to 80 degrees, but there's no mosquitoes. It was just like, especially in the morning, it was just beautiful. Everything's flat, so riding a bike it's just a nice exercise without it being, like you've become a Marine or something. There's bike paths, which is great because I love riding a bike, but I don't want to ride in traffic. So it's beautiful bike paths. They go over bridges, and we're having this lovely breakfast. And it was just good. I ordered a veggie omelet, and it was just good. The broccoli was good in it. And it was one of those like, wow, this wheat toast is really good. Everything's good. Seriously, this is what you're going to sit here in this setting. This is what you're going to talk about. Really? And to my credit, I shut it down. I was like, oh, wait a minute. Wow. That's an old not tape. What's on your computer? It's an old program. That's an old program that I thought was deleted off this hard drive. And look, there it is. So delete. And let's just say, oh, that was an unfortunate thing that happened in your childhood many years ago. Really? That's what we're going to bring to this beautiful setting. Huh, that's a great idea. Let's get up on a beautiful morning in Hilton Head and go talk about trauma from my childhood. That sounds good. But, before, that's what I'm saying. You have to, it doesn't just kick in and then you've got it forever. That's why I wish people would understand, those of us who really make the effort to stay proactive and stay positive. I would say even most Christians don't do that. So some things I read that Christians post, I think, wow, Lord, you are so negative and divisive and tribal and like, ugh. Why can't you just say, hey, Billy Graham wasn't perfect, but wow, he did a lot of good stuff. Saying rest in peace doesn't mean I endorse and embrace everything this person ever said. I've gotten to where even when I just use somebody's quote, I go Google and make sure, let me check them out, because as soon as I use this quote, somebody's going to say, in 1935, that guy, like, is it Edison? Was it Edison that did some experiments on animals that now animal groups think were inhumane? Okay, I'm sorry. I just wanted to use. I don't know everything. It's just social media has ratcheted up everything to it's way too hot. It's just way too hot. It's like you can't say anything. There's with the political thing, it's like there's no give on either side. There's no, well, that may be a good point. Like, I don't agree with this, but okay, that could be it. No, it's like, don't give an inch, don't give an inch, don't give an inch. On either side. Shoot, I've talked myself into it. I'm going out of town this afternoon. Let's go. Bye. I clearly wasn't ready to come back. But when you're just in the middle of it, just constantly, you're like, woo, daddy needs a break. Right. No, it's everything. And it's been coming for a while. It's been coming for a while. And yes. And I feel it. I'm not thinking the world's supposed to be, you know, I'm not a Pollyanna, but you do want to think, well, there's a two-party system because there's two different ideologies that are supposed to work together, and they sort of balance each other out. And if you don't like who's in office, you can vote for the other, and that's why we have checks and balances and three branches of government. Like all of those things I learned in civics and in political science, the idealistic part of me goes, no, that's a good thing. I want there to be conservatives and liberals. I want there to be balance. I like that. I don't want an emperor. I'm glad that a whoever gets elected still has to be accountable to other branches of government. Like for whatever those men who, yes, they were European, they probably in their age, yes, they probably were racist, they probably were slave owners. Their ideas were amazing. So, you know, let's say, well, they put this into, and now we are in a place where we can say, oh, it is liberty and justice for all. They may not have meant that. When they wrote it, they may have meant white European men. That is probably what they meant. That was their paradigm. But the word now in this culture can be great. Life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. Let's get to that place now. And but I think people are feeling it, man, from everywhere. And there's just some days you get so saturated with it, you know. And then if you are a regular presence on social media and then you go off, then it sometimes that makes a more dramatic statement. Then it's like, then I if I ever do that, then I start getting the text, are you okay? Are you okay? I'm like, ugh. Let me go to my next quote. Dr. Joe, I'm going to quote him today. It says, your thoughts and feelings come from your past memories. If you think and feel a certain way, you begin to create an attitude. I've used this before, but it makes my point today. An attitude is a cycle of short-term thoughts and feelings experienced over and over again. Attitudes are shortened states of being. If you string a series of attitudes together, you create a belief. Beliefs are more elongated states of being and tend to become subconscious. When you add beliefs together, you create a perception. Your perceptions have everything to do with the choices you make, the behaviors you exhibit, the relationships you chose, and the realities you create. There's nothing I can add to that. That's everything that I'm telling you this month about reimagining your life, taking self-pity out of the equation. When I say don't feel sorry for yourself, I'm not saying horrendous things didn't happen to you. I'm not saying deny that. In fact, I'm saying process it. In fact, I'm saying put some salve on the scar. I'm not saying the scar is not there. Looking back over all that you've created is also looking at your failures and mistakes and go, well, yeah, that's part of it. That's part of it. I look back over 46 years of ministry and I go, well, yeah, there was some ego in there and there was some selfishness. But in the midst of that humanity, some amazing things. I mean, a week, in aside from everything I've just said, a week doesn't pass that I don't get a message from somebody somewhere in the world who says, you probably don't remember me. I used to come to church now, but you changed my life. You changed my life. That's the mantra I hear. I mean, one thing is, if you ever go to my funeral, somebody please stand up and say, he changed somebody's life. Because that seemed to have been the theme. For whatever I wanted to be said, that's the one, you changed my life. Those are the four words I've heard the most in my life. So I know my coming to the earth was significant, and I believe I made a positive difference. That doesn't mean I did everything that was great. There's all kind of things I could look at and go, oh, man, you should have handled that better. You should have done that differently. Sometimes when you're in the middle of something, you're just doing the best you can. You look back on it, and you think, why didn't I do that? But that's not where you were at the time. So there's no point in even going there because you're like, well, I wasn't equipped to do that at that time. So I learned from that. So now if a thing like that happens again, I probably will handle it differently. But to sit here and regret it and cry over it is only going to, all you're going to do is go back on that scar and say, let me see if I can cut this thing open again. Let me see if I can cut this scar open again, and maybe it'll get infected. Yeah, that would be good. Maybe I can just get that scar really good. Maybe it'll be bad enough to have to cut my arm off. That'll show them. yesterday, they had this thing. In Hilton had the Seafood Festival. So we went there, and it was cool. It's like all these vendors there. You buy tickets, and you know they all. We didn't eat a lot. I got some shrimp tacos, and he got some shrimp, and it was good. It was good music, and we didn't stay that long. It was kind of hot, but they're out there. But it was good. And so when we got there, I had to walk over under a shade tree to see my phone because when the hot sun's on, you can't see it. So I had stepped out of line. He was getting the tickets. So when I stepped back in line, this couple behind me said something about people being rude, but, you know, breaking in line. And, you know, it would normally be beside the point that it was an African-American couple, but in this climate, I want to go, oh, my God, no, I'm not. This isn't white privilege. I'm with him. Like, please, okay, I'm, you know, I don't want to say, I know a lot of black people, because that automatically reveals that you're a racist. When you hear somebody say, a white man say, I have a lot of black friends, that's code for I'm a racist. So that the wife said, no, we're not talking about you. Something happened with somebody over there. We know you're with him. She says, this wasn't about you at all. And I said, believe me, I know. I didn't tell him I was a minister, but I said, I've been in so many situations where I tried to get a point across somebody that went right over their head. And then the people that I didn't even know their name were like, I knew you meant me when you said that. You looked right at me. I'm like, oh, baby, it so wasn't you. So we had a good little talk, and I'm like, so we're good. We're good. It's all good. Black Lives Matter. All right, let's go. You know, I want everybody. I just want some shrimp. I don't want no trouble. But I thought, it would be easy for me to assume that she was talking about me getting back in line. What was my point in telling you that? It's what you get what you look for. If you are motivated by being rejected, you will make people reject you. If you are self-abusive, you will make people abuse you. You will not leave them alone until they are abusive, and then you find a way, and they talk about it in that book. They've like you find a way to agree on the abuse, and I've taught on that before. It's very, I mean, it's a deep concept. I told you this before, but I remember one night, it was one day we were having a staff meeting. We were still out in Covington, and that was why I was still in the midst of all the, still getting a lot of mail. And then somebody just written me a horrible letter, and I'm sitting there at the staff meeting, and I kept thinking, I want to tell everybody about this letter I got last night. But then I thought, why? I'm sitting there examining, like, why do I want to tell them this? Because I know they all love me. They're all on my side. So it's not like I'm trying to, like, what would be the point? And I'm just wanting to reach out and share. That's a human, I mean, I'm really thinking all these things. Like, what's the motivation? Do I want them to pity me? Do I want, like, what is that? And I ended up just swallowing it. I thought, I'm not going to, now I haven't done, other times I have told. But I remember that was kind of a turning point. I mean, like, what's the point of me telling this? What's this going to, all I'm going to get out of them is, oh my God, I can't believe somebody said that to you. What's the point? All it's going to do is bring that person to the table. They're not here in person, but they're going to be a part of the staff meeting. So you have to think about all those things, because it's like, if you could picture this, the words coming out of your mouth are creating the next thing you're going to walk into. Like if I say joy, I just walked into joy. I'm having a good day. Okay, I'm walking into, I'm constantly creating it. It's like there's a road coming out of your mouth. You're exalting every valley. You're bringing every mountain low. You're preparing the way of the Lord. You're saying, this is going to be a good day. This is going to be a productive week. We're going to have a wonderful vacation. This is going to be a wonderful event, whatever. And the universe bows to that declaration. The next thing I want to show you, Dr. Dyer, I'm quoting all the greats today. It says, all blame is a waste of time. Thanks for coming. No matter how much fault you find with another, and regardless of how much you blame him, it will not change you. If there's something you've said over and over and over again, and it may be a valid point. Maybe something horrible did happen in a childhood or a marriage or an event. Maybe you're not even embellishing it. It was horrible. What's the point of saying it over and over again? I'll tell you this. I believe in counseling. I believe in life coaching. I think Dr. Ralph's a great life. I think he's a great life coach because he pulls people up. Like he brings the best case scenario. And I'm not against traditional therapy, but let me tell you something about going to a therapist. Therapists have to make money. They have to have a clientele. So the point of therapy for most is not to get you well, it's to keep you coming back. So it's, let me pick at that scab a little bit and then say our time is up for today, so that next week you have to come back. Now, I'm not against therapy. I think there's a time where you should go to one. Right before I came out, I went to a guy two or three times who that's what he helped people do. He helped people come out publicly. And I remember, and he gave me some good pointers. And I remember the day I thought, well, I think we're done here, because you gave me a neutral place where I could talk some things out. When I hear somebody's been in therapy for 40, 50 years nonstop, I think, wow, how many laps are you going to make around Sinai? Now, if you just want somebody to talk to, that's fine. If you're just really lonely, you might want to get a friend. Now, the good thing about a therapist is you can pay somebody and they just have to shut up and listen to you. So that may be worthwhile, if you can't get a word in edgewise. But always remember this, that there's only so far therapy can take you. You keep digging up certain things. They're going to be ugly no matter how many times you look at them. They just are. So I'm not saying it's a bad thing. I'm saying it should probably be a temporary thing. Like if you're going through a hard time and you just need some extra help, that's when you reach out for it, not when it becomes a lifestyle. Because when it's a lifestyle, you just, I'm sorry, you just get too self-absorbed. It's like, well, here's my hour to talk about how the world has mistreated me. That's what I feel about counseling. I don't mind counseling, and I still do a good bit of it. But there's only so much I can tell you, especially if you already hear my voice. Most of what I'm going to tell you one-on-one is going to be very similar to what I've said holding a microphone talking to everybody. But I know there are times where you need another viewpoint, like help me see this from another. And that's what counseling should do. It's like take you out of yourself and say, try to look at it from this vantage point. And sometimes you do need somebody externally. Sometimes a couple needs a neutral third party to hear them out. Those are valid things. I am not anti-counseling. I'm not anti-therapy. I'm certainly not anti-life coaching. You just have to keep all of that in perspective and realize there are times you go through life where you need extra help, and then there are other times you just have to live your life. Did you say suck it up? That's what I was thinking. This is interesting. Now, this is going to be an interesting quote. Let me tell you why I included this. This really struck me. Strangely enough, this struck me more than anything else I'm saying today. By this woman who's, she's an author. But this quote, I found this very intriguing. She says, when nothing is sure, everything is possible. Let me tell you why I think that's important. We were taught, the kind of background I had, like a strong intercessor background or faith background, we were taught to be sure of everything. I know that I know. I hope against hope. And I've seen a lot of people who said they stood on the word and confessed their healing that still died. And there's, you know, there are a lot of things that were just unexplainable that makes me want to say I believe in belief. I believe in believing what works for you. I certainly believe in finding your, for lack of a better term, rhema word. The idea of being absolutely sure for someone else or something that's outside your sphere of influence, outside of your metron, I'm a little uncomfortable with people that are that sure. I remember being a kid and hearing prophecy preachers say there is no way Jesus could come any later than 1988. I grew up hearing it. When people ask me why I made certain life choices growing up, I never planned for 31. I always thought I'll live till I'm 30. I mean, that was always the plan. When Judah's mom and I got married, we thought we'd be married about 3 weeks. We actually moved the wedding up. I don't know if she remembers this. We actually moved the wedding up so we could have a wedding because that's how sure we were. You know, the rapture will take place around Rosh Hashanah, so we probably should move it up to August. That's why we moved it up. Now, you could say that's crazy, but I mean, I grew up hearing that. So when I hear that people are that sure of something, after a while, you're like, really? I even saw as recently as this week. I mean, on my maiden page, I got 5,000 friends, so I don't know. There's thousands of people I don't even know. I don't even know how we became friends. And when I read the stuff they post, I'm like, you clearly don't know me. But I was amazed at how many people posted pictures of things blooming and saying, you know, Jesus is coming back soon, like it was some sign of the time. I'm like, you know, it's just warm, wet, really? I couldn't believe, I mean, I thought, is this a joke? Is this a joke? This is really what you live in? You really think, yeah, it's obnoxious when stuff blooms early and then it freezes later. And we go through that every year. Every year. I don't remember a February that we didn't have a little warm spell and some stuff popped out. And everybody said, I hope it don't freeze. And sure enough, sometime in March, it gets cold again. So I remember the first week of April, one year, it snowed. So that happens every year. I'm like, really? That's your sign of the time? No wonder you can't receive revelation. You're living in such a shallow mindset. And she just said you can make anything you want it to be. And that's what's happening. That's why people need to keep theology out of politics. Because what you do is you read too much stuff into things and you think everything's a sign of the time. The Lord sets up one and puts down another. Really? Well, then how did Hitler get in power? Did the Lord set up Hitler? Some preachers think he did. There's a pastor in Texas who says he got in trouble for it because he said God raised up Hitler so the Jews would have to move back to Israel. Well, you know, if your mama was killed at Auschwitz, you kind of don't like that. That one kind of doesn't work. Really? Why did my grandparents have to get gassed at Auschwitz? You know, like, but you can, whatever you project, including spiritual warfare. Baby, I'm going to tell you something. If you're looking for demons, I remember, bless his heart, Kim Clement had such a great gift, but he had a lot of traditional baggage that warred with his gift. And I remember him saying, you know, every time I come into a city, it rains and there's a storm because the principalities know I'm coming. And, you know, I said, have you ever thought it's just weather? I mean, really, I mean, is it really? And I'm not being sarcastic, but I mean, really, do you think you're making too much out of that? If you think, because that's kind of a grandiose idea that, you know, like, really? My entrance to a city is determining weather patterns? And you know all that. So, you know, I've complained about for years all the stuff people said about Katrina. God's destroying New Orleans. Then what about all the other weather catastrophes? No, there's definitely a lot of catastrophes. No, there's no doubt about that. But those are just scientific phenomena that we're trying to figure out why things happen like they do. Don't make it spiritual. Because I'm going to tell you something. I'm about to turn 60. So that means I've lived twice the amount of time that I thought I was going to live. I'm still middle-aged. That's right. Happy birthday. But, oh, man, I remember, you know, I mean, even people that I respected would say, you know, and before that, the communists are going to come. I'd pray every night, and I'd look out, waiting for the tanks to be, who knew? They weren't going to come with tanks. They were going to come with cyber. Completely different tanks. Too expensive to get tanks over here. But all those things, and even now, on the, you know, for whatever, with North Korea, whatever, we've always been on the brink of, some of us remember the Cuban Missile Crisis. I mean, I was young enough to just barely know something was going on, but I remember people talking about it, just being on the edge. You know, at a certain point, you're like, well, if this is the last day, maybe we ought to go to Disney World. I mean, at a certain point, like how many, I even remember Christianity notwithstanding. Remember all the 2012 stuff that was said because the Mayan calendar said, I remember watching a documentary about, you can't believe how many survivalist groups had moved out into the mountains with freeze-dried food and stuff because of 2012. Y2K. 2012 was 6 years ago. They're probably out of their rations by now. Like, at some point, you go, I guess we're going to have to ride back to Kroger. You know, like, I mean. You can't live like that. But if you're looking for not even big picture theological stuff, if you're just looking for little demonic stuff, you will find, you'd be amazed how many demons you can create in a day. What? what I liked about this is, and I think you're all here with me, you are sure of yourself. You're sure of the love of God. You're sure of, but there's a lot of things you're not sure about anymore, and that's okay. If anything, it's kind of healthy. Because then, when you hear somebody say something about, well, God's doing this, whatever, you're like, well, could be. That could be happening. Okay. But when you're just sure that you're sure that you're sure, all you do is argue with people who don't agree with you. Like, if somebody says they're atheist, I don't know. That's kind of, I don't know. If somebody says they're agnostic, I'm like, well, I accept that. Because agnosticism says, I don't know that you can know. Some people say, well, that's, you better know that you know, build your house on the rock. Let me tell you something. Religion is not the problem, fundamentalism is. And that's not just, I'm not just pinning that on Christianity. All Muslim terrorism has come from fundamentalist, fanatical interpretations of the Quran. I don't know that much about it, but there's a show that's, it must be coming out soon, a sitcom called Living Biblically. Have y'all seen this advertised? The only clip I saw, it must be a guy who's, he's trying to live his life by the Bible. And apparently somebody, it could be interesting, because apparently somebody in the cast committed adultery, and he says, you know, the Bible says I'm supposed to stone you. And he just throws a rock at it and runs out. And I'm sure the fundamentalists are going to really be down on this. I think this, I don't know that much about it. From what I've seen, I thought that could be an interesting, like, there's a way humor, a spoonful of sugar makes the medicine go down. And it could show people why some things need to be looked, you know, some of the stuff that Moses said, God said, you're like, Moses, I love you, baby, but I don't think God said that. And I don't think you really think that. But when you're sure that you're sure, then you've got the God of war. I just think we used to sing so many back in the, not just we at Church of the Now, but just the charismatic men, so many warfare songs that I don't think people even knew what they were singing about. They rush on the city, they run on the wall, for great as the army. And everybody be doing, blow the trumpet in Zion. And it's a fun song. Sound the alarm on my holy. And we don't know what we were fighting, but my God, we were. Blow the trumpet in Zion, Zion. Sound the alarm. It was like a pep rally. And I used to think, do y'all have any idea what the scripture's about? I don't know, but we're going to blow that trumpet in Zion. Like, what exactly does that mean to you? It means sound the alarm on my whole, like, what does that mean? I don't know. It's this idea of there's a fight going on, there's a fight going on, there's a fight. Jesus says, now the God of this world is cast down. If I'm lifted up, I'll draw him into me. And it's nearly like Jesus, even in his earth walk, was already so next level that he was a universalist. And he was. I have sheep and other pastures that you don't know anything about, but they'll all come together. They'll all have one shepherd. That's a really, if somebody said that today, they'd be, you know, there'd be stuff, blogs about them. And he says, no, if they're those that are not against us are for us. What? He said that long before social media, because everybody's against everybody now. I'm going to wrap up with this, and I've used it many times before, but it just will make my point as we end this series. This is John chapter 1, verses 1 through 5 and verse 14 in the Kabouris manuscript. And yes, I'm going to get you one. Wellington wants one. I need to order you one. I will. This is where what we're used to saying is, in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. In the Aramaic, it says, at the very beginning, there was willed action. And the willed action then was by God, or Allah, and God was that willed action. King James says, in the beginning, the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Do you understand why it's important to not just have this finite idea of an old man sitting on a throne that you call God? Because John here, in his very next level theology, says, well, in the Word was with God, but the Word actually was God. He's not even giving it anthropomorphic dimensions. God is universal. God is an idea. God is, yes, he slash she slash it is a person, but not limited to personhood. So that if somebody says, the universe is on my side, it's not an anti-God statement. You're just saying, yeah, I have some ideas about God that work within my comfort zone, but I also know God's a bigger idea than that. Because the Word was with God, but the Word was God. I mean, you could talk about that forever. Or there was willed action, but that willed action was God. Have you ever just made a very powerful decision and it just felt so right and you executed it and it's like, man, that just felt like God? Because it was. The willed action was God. The will was God. The action was God. Even, and I know this is a hot button issue, and I'm say this as neutral as I can, but people saying this week, thoughts and prayers aren't enough for the school shooting situation. I thought, you know, that's an interesting point. How many people are saying, well, we're praying for you, but you're not, A, you're not praying for them, B, some things have to action change. Too much time wasted. It's like prayer has nearly become too dismissive. Well, you're in my thoughts and prayers. Well, I'd rather you do something. Like I remember a woman giving a testimony one time on Christian TV. She was in bed and she was sick, and this intercessors group kept coming to her house and praying for her. And she said, I remember all these women around my bed speaking in tongues and having their hand on my head. And the whole time they're praying, I'm looking at dust on my dresser that I was too sick to get up and dust. She said, you know what? I would love is for one of y'all to clean my house. That would do more for me than 1,000 intercessors. For somebody that I trusted to say, can I come over and clean up? You'd be like, yeah, please. But too many people want to pray. We want to pray. One thing, and it doesn't help. Yes, it helps them feel like they did something. Yeah. And the willed action then was by God, Allah, and God was that willed action. The beginning was by God. All was by him, and without him was not a single thing. Not a single thing came into being out of that which was. From him there came into being a perfect life, and this perfect life became light unto all men. And this light out of darkness caused light, and darkness did not overcome. And willed action became flesh and dwelt among us, and we saw glory as if begotten from the Father, completely filled with heavenliness and righteousness. There's just, to me, the first time I ever read that, there was such a it introduced such a different vibration to my mind. I mean, I grew up quoting John chapter 1. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God. I used to sing it. In the beginning was the Word, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. Was God, the Word was God. I grew up with all that. The same was in the beginning with God. The same was in the beginning with God. All things were made by him, and without him was not anything made that was made. In him was life. I mean, those words are, those neuropaths in my brain are deeply ingrained. Then to read this, in the beginning was willed action. Like, wow. You just introduced a completely different vibration to my brain, and it opened up a third eye. I mean, it opened up a whole other way of thinking about this, so that instead of me just idly sitting by waiting for the thing to happen, I make something happen. I will an action. And then whatever happens, I accept the consequences. And if it's not as good as it should be, then I work to make it better. And I don't blame God. It's just la la land that people are living in. When things don't work out, they blame God for it. There was a big move in the 70s during the height of part of the charismatic movement, where people were quitting their jobs and were going to live by faith. There was, I mean, an epidemic of it. I'm going to quit my job and live by faith. You can't believe how many people lost everything during that time. And you think, and then they were mad at God. Well, if you're going to go by the Bible says he don't work, don't eat. There's a scripture for you. Well, God sent ravens to feed Elijah. Well, you're not Elijah. And there's no ravens around. You're probably going to need up and get you a job. And then I remember somebody I was counseling with that said, my wife left me because we went to some clubs and we opened ourselves up to demons. And I know it was demonic warfare, and that's why she left. And I said, can I just tell you something? I mean, have all the demons you want, but when she counseled with me, the problem was that you wouldn't work. And when she was working, we get up and go to work every day, you were laying on the couch. And when she got home at the end of the day, you were still laying on the couch. Now, I know you want to make that about demons, but according to her story, she got tired of that. You know not what a spirit you're of. All right, fine. All right, rebuke me. I'm just telling you what she said. But you see how demons are such a luxury. You can just say, oh, we just opened ourselves up to the devil. No, you opened yourself up to your couch. I was going to end this with a meditation, but I just talked and talked and talked. We ain't got no meditating time. Let's all stand. If we're not going to do a full-blown meditation, then just stand still for a moment. Close your eyes. Process that word. At least be in a meditative mode. And while you're here, and just breathe deeply. Oxygenate your mind and your body while these words impregnate your spirit. Reimagine your life. Reimagine your past. Embrace the sixth day so that you can enter the seventh. There is a Sabbath for you. There's a Sabbath for your heart. There's a Sabbath for your mind. There's a time to let things go. There's a time to be at peace with yourself. Be at peace with God. Be at peace with your body. Be at peace with your age. Be at peace with your life choices. Be at peace with your relationships, all of them. Be at peace with everything you've walked through, everything that you've experienced. Be at peace with every heartache, every heartbreak. Just be at peace. Peace is the power. The kingdom of God is not eating and drinking. It's righteousness, peace, and joy in the Holy Ghost. It's entering into the Sabbath. Your life is what it is. Get your arms around it. Embrace it. Be at peace with it. Whatever needs to change can change, but not as long as you're blaming someone else. Accept the responsibility for your own life and walk in your divinity. Speak into your own universe. Let there be light. Hold things, all things together by the word of your power. You still have time. You still have good days ahead of you. All things, as we already sang today, all things are possible. All things are possible. All things are possible. I wash you with that word. Amen. Please remain standing. We'll hit this. I'm going to let you go. Did you get anything out of this today?
Contributing to Metron is quick and easy.
Easy peasy.
Simply text the amount you would like to give.
Simply.
To 404-620-5044. And now you can give anytime by texting this number. You will then receive a one-time registration form that links your phone number and opens your account at SimpleGive. Complete the form, and you will then receive a successful registration and donation page. For additional information on your account, visit missionthenow.com and click the Support tab. Then, My Online Donation. When you contribute to Metron, you're also supporting the charity or organization of the month. Thank you for your investment in Metron.
If you have a check, make it to JESM, and they'll be back there to receive it. If you have cash, pay it forward. You might want to bless Judah with it. Also, find out where you can go buy tickets for the Atlanta Music Festival. Even if it's not your personal taste in music, then buy a ticket for somebody else. Say, I'd like to buy one so that they've got some, for lack of a better word, scholarships they could give people. Because that's not very much. That'd be a great way to pay it forward. Just say, I'd like to buy one ticket for $35, and I know that would help him out, and it would be something good you could do. And it may be music you enjoy. Maybe y'all are all rockers at heart. I don't know. I see y'all in a mosh pit in front of the Black Lips. It could happen. But I tell Judah how much we appreciate him being with us. And he will be tonight at the Movement at 5 p.m. And anytime you ever want to go visit them in East Atlanta, you always have my blessing to do that. God bless you. Go in peace. The angel of the Lord encamps round about you. You wake up tomorrow saying, this is the day the Lord has enabled me to make. I will rejoice and be glad in it. I got mad love for you.